This talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel Sensei at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
I'd like to start with something from Pema Chodron. From comfortable with uncertainty. Those who train wholeheartedly in awakening bodhicitta are called bodhisattvas, who enter challenging situations in order to alleviate suffering. They are willing to cut through personal reactivity and self-deception. They are dedicated to uncovering the basic, undistorted energy of bodhicitta. They who never know what will happen next. We can try to control the uncontrollable by looking for security and predictability, always hoping to be comfortable and safe. But the truth is, we can never avoid uncertainty. This not knowing is part of the adventure. It also is what makes us afraid. Wherever we are, we can train sitting, standing, walking, lying down, meditation, cultivating the four limitless qualities of loving kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity, not harming. With the help of these practices, we will find the tenderness of bodhicitta in sorrow and gratitude, behind the hardness of rage and in the shakiness of fear. In loneliness, as well as in kindness, we can uncover the soft spot of basic goodness. But bodhicitta training offers no promise of happy endings. Rather, this I who wants to find security, who wants something to hold on to, will finally learn to grow up. The root of suffering is resisting the certainty that no matter what the circumstances, uncertainty is all we truly have. Bodhicitta, citta, means mind and also heart. Heart-mind is one character or attitude, is one attitude. And bodhi means awake, enlightened, completely opened. Bodhicitta, completely opened heart-mind to the suffering of others, to our own, a spontaneous wish that we don't suffer, to understand that it's not something we either have or we don't, or something we need to acquire, but it's a way of relating to our mind and the world based on seeing clearly, not the illusion of a self, an inherently fixed self, shall I say. And one who has the motivation to do such a thing is you, bodhisattva. Its nature is to test what we can be, the greatest of our human potential, the greatest unfoldment of our potential. And it takes courage to relate to our heart and mind in such a way, to have that as what we want to do, how we want to be in this world, how we want to see the world. So my first incarnation of a talk was on courage, which we heard about. And I don't think we can be encouraged enough to do this work. recognizing with courage that we do need something to powerfully energize our heart, our mind, to stay and walk the path. So the Bodhisattva path is a path of courage, because what is bound to get touched is our comfort zones, right? We're going to get uncomfortable really quick. Just look at lunch, especially if you were a server. How do we burn with love for the world, for ourself, that we can't fix or is uncertain? And the characters for the Chinese characters for courage is standing in tall wild grasses. That seems pretty good. So, standing in tall wild grasses, you know, it reminds me of that first ox herding picture where it's all weeds. You know, looking out, that first picture, there's no path until we take a step. But it's all like these weeds. It's like, okay, bushwhack, kind of. And, you know, the Buddha spoke in many sutras of fearlessness, which Roshi mentioned is courage, being fearless. And to meet fearlessness, we have to meet fear. We have to meet our fear. That's how we meet what's fearless. If we're afraid and we walk, move, step into, we start to touch what it means to be fearless, what it means to have courage. And we tend to think of, you know, compassion as warm and fuzzy, at least I do, soothing, but it's actually very raw. It's a very raw thing. And of course, it takes wisdom and compassion, the Bodhisattva path, both. So, in the Lotus Sutra, there's a story, which I love, about the Buddha speaking to the assembly on Vulture Peak, one of the many talks he gave on skillful means. It's chapter 2 of the Lotus Sutra. And he's about to preach on the most sublime Dharma teaching at the request of Shariputra. Now, fortunately, I got to be on Mount Kutukutra on Vulture Peak. I can't imagine 5,000 people up there, but I suppose it's possible. I mean, everyone fit in Vimala Kirti's living room, so I guess they can somehow get onto Vulture Peak. Many people, monks, nuns, lay women, lay men. And so he was teaching these skillful means of entering the path, and he got to the one Buddha vehicle he wanted to preach on, complete Buddhahood. But he said there was, so he said to this, to there's still more I haven't taught yet, but it's way beyond ordinary comprehension. He says no one will be able to understand it, and people are going to leave. So Shariputra said three times the request, please, Lord, preach this last part. No, people are going to leave, I'm telling you. They're going to get uncomfortable. Please, a third time. And so Buddha, on behalf of Shariputra's request, says he'll explain it further, where it says even before he got to it, because people were settled in a way, 5,000 members of the assembly decided to leave. They decided they already know everything and don't need to stick around to hear it, and they're not about to stay. So Shariputra, you know, gets all freaked out and panicky and says, should I get them back? Should I do something? And the Buddha says, no. Let them go. Just let them leave. He allowed them to follow the freedom of their own mind and providing a model, in a sense, how, without causing conflict, we can allow others to live differently. So he provided that model. From the disciples' point of view, they'd rather leave than face their confusion or their uncertainty, because that's where they were thrust. The Buddha threw them, he was speaking on the Prajnaparamita Sutra, and he was about to speak that there's absolutely nothing to rely on. No skillful means, it all goes. So they didn't wish to hear a different teaching. Later, in another paragraph, Shariputra asks this question: in the future, will there be people who will walk this path? Will there be people who pursue the bodhisattva path, really want to practice this perfection of wisdom, this wisdom, the Prajnaparamita, the Dharma, the truth of an uncertain world? Will they really want to face it? The Buddha says, sure, there will be people who want to do that, but very few will actually get to the bottom of it. Very few will have that aspiration and determination, that courage to really face this. And he says, I don't know if this is how this got recorded, but anyway, the Buddha says, it's good that those of overweening pride have left. Overweening, arrogant or smug in their knowing. Now only the best people remain. So you're nobody left yet. That's a good thing. Only the most sincere. The text refers to these 5,000 and also to those in the future who run off when they hear that the sutra is going to be lectured. They do not respect their teacher, the Buddha, the Dharma, or the Sangha. All day long, they do not know what they are doing. They are those of overweening arrogance. So what happens when we're uncertain and out of our comfort zones? What do you do? I know what I do. Go to the familiar ground. Just go to somewhere that's familiar. And what we're learning to do is stay. Stay when we're thrust into what's unknown, uncertain. And this is the challenge we meet in Sesshin, because that happens a lot. We just don't know. And that's almost unbearable. So when we're distracted by a strong emotion, can we remember and stay that this is part of the path? When distracted and it's hard to practice, hard to come back, but we're aware of this, do we still see this as training as well? So never underestimate the power of compassionately recognizing what's going on. And these days we know we'd have to be living in a very, very deep fog if we're not aware how world events are pushing us, our individual lives, community lives, deeper and deeper into these levels of uncertainty. And at times it could seem there's no end in sight, one thing after another. Whether we admit it or not, or choose to pay attention, choose to worry about it or ignore it, it's what's happening. Our life has always been fragile and fleeting, more fragile than ever with things we are doing, and actually we can stop doing. So this is why we need courage to face. Because this is our place, we are the people, this is our time, these are our children. And there's all kinds of uncertainty. There's these large ones looming, lots of wars going on, these nuclear things we have created that are could be annihilating. They're here. We know the terrorists, the terror in places we thought things would never be reaching. Overheating of the planet, erosion, the water we depend on. How is it doing? And then there's our individual life uncertainties. Where will we live? What work will we have? Will we still have a job? Struggles with our money, our finances, our relationships. I'm not trying to bum you out. It's just a bummer, some of it. Yeah. And then there's, you know, very small uncertainties like, will there be avocados still at $1.50 this week? I don't know. Will it rain on Sunday? Will I get this talk onto paper? So it's enough to make us want to go to Sesshin, isn't it? This is why we need courage and encouragement. I went to a retreat at the temple with Sabine Selesi on cultural bypassing, and she was asking what gets left out in practice. What gets left out? And she spoke about dealing with each time we would come up with something that was left out. We would, and she would speak about the unbearable complexities, like no right or wrong, just the unbearable complexities of everything. But to examine, what are we bringing in? If something's left out, what's in? And how did it get in? And how complex that is. They who never know what will happen to us next. We try to control the uncontrollable by looking for security and predictability, always hoping to be comfortable and safe. But the truth is we can never avoid uncertainty. This not knowing is part of the adventure. It's also what makes us afraid. How come we constantly attempt to secure a life that's groundless by nature? How do we listen and become part of the teaching rather than trying to grab onto the teaching? To really see and feel and experience what becomes part of us. Not the knowledge, but to experience the teaching. And here in Sesshin, it's where we can just sit down to just notice. Notice how the body's breathing on its own. Wow. The body is breathing on its own. That's quite a notice. There's nothing for us to do. We don't have to manage it. Nothing for us to manage this time. And this is life. Pema also remarked, never underestimate the inclination to bolt. Should I stay or should I go? I really want to know. I was remembering the movie called Young at Heart. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's a group of septo, octo, and nonogenarians who are willing to move out of their comfort zones, and they form a choir under the lead of this musician to dive into rock, punk, and disco singing. It's fantastic. And it opens with a 94-year-old woman from Germany, 94, and she's just in a T-shirt, and there's a big spotlight on her, and she's singing that song. Should I stay or should I go? I really want to know. She's 94, you know, and she's singing Clash. And, you know, they did I Want to Be Sedated. That was really beautiful, and I think they did Give Me Inconvenience or Give Me Liberty by Dead Kennedys. It's pretty wonderful to see them and inspiring, but totally out of their comfort zone. So are we going to depart every time we don't understand something, are challenged, are uncomfortable? It's not so easy to live out of our true nature, that there's nothing to rely on. To give into that possibility and not be afraid. Pema said, to be encouraged and have the courage to stay with our vulnerability is news we can use. We should put that on the 6 o'clock news. Today we're going to be encouraged to stay with our vulnerability, no matter what the circumstances. Uncertainty is all we truly have. There was this Burmese master, he remarked, Sayadaw, avoiding difficult situations or running away from them does not usually take much skill or effort, but doing so prevents us from testing our own limits and from growing. The ability to face difficulties can be crucial for our growth. However, if you're faced with a situation in which the difficulties are simply overwhelming, you should step back for the time being and wait until you have built up enough strength to deal with it skillfully. It doesn't mean you leave, but you loosen, perhaps. Be humble, quiet, step back, listen, surrender. But, you know, we get to the edge and stand there looking over, and it's like, well, maybe not today. Maybe I'll just go for a cup of coffee before I really give in completely. It's said in the sutra that some people had a heart attack when he started talking about this. Like they were, that's how freaked out they were hearing it. Why do we bolt? Why do we bolt? It says, when people really look into this, they get depressed or angry, resentful or frightened and leave because our wish to rely on something external or internal is so great. That's what the Buddha pulled out. And he knew people weren't going to like this. We don't like it, do we? No reliance on words, bank accounts, houses, partners, ideas about self, about other, enlightenment, the world, Buddhahood. The gateless gate won't take anything substantial. That's how open we need to be. So, so open. And so in Zazen, we can study and mindfully become aware of our tendency and develop clear seeing, steadfastness. When that bolt comes, how many swings do we go through? You know, it's like one moment in session, it's like, oh my God, I want to do this for the rest of my life. As soon as I go home, I'm going to set everything up, I'm going to sit. Next period, I'm out of here. Pat it. No more. Too much. Not enough. I remember one time, I wasn't a monk yet, because I remember I was in my gray robe, and I remember I had a lot of hair. And I remember it was hot out, and I was hot and bothered. And I came right out of Dokusan, and I was just like, I'm leaving. And I walked out the front door. I pounded to the front gate, and I just stood there and looked, because that chain was on. And I stood right there, and I was like looking out, and I hear, Hojin. And I'm like, God, is this my moment? And I'm looking, and I hear again, Hojin, and I'm like, Jesus, and it was calling me for sure. It wanted attention, and I turn around, and Daido's got the window open. He's hanging out on the window, and he said, "You can leave, but there's nowhere to go." And then I heard the window clink. And I was like, ah. I stomped back in. Yeah. We don't come to session to retreat, going on retreat, but we come to advance by choice, to move forward into uncertainty as a choice. You know that coming in here. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen every time you sit down. I mean, do you? If you got that formula, tell me. I don't know. I've never known what's going to happen when I sit down. I know what I have to do, and I know it's uncertain. So it's not something forced on us by the world or by life circumstances, but by choice. So what is uncertainty? It's not fixed, settled, dependable, reliable, inevitable, incapable of failing, destined. Those are all from Webster. What is it when our life, our society, our world is not fixed, settled, dependable, reliable, inevitable, incapable of failing, destined, when we are thrown into disarray and majorly confused? Are we not in it? Are we not into uncertainty? And when there's no fixed point or a coherent direction, there's fear and there's a sense of death, hopelessness, living, dying, living, dying, living, dying, living, dying. Which is it? We were asked. When there's nothing to depend on, that self that each of us calls I faces uncertainty of that continuing, that I continuing in that particular way. I made up the word a death initiation, and like a definition. When our definitions fail to secure us. And that's why at the heart of the matter, we fear uncertainty so much. It's a loss of the comfortable, the familiar, the known I, the fixed points of certainty. That's why we want to prop up. Tell me I'm okay. Tell me I'm okay. Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm right so you can be wrong. You can be wrong so I can be right. And then we cling. But I am this. I am this. There's a line in the Dhammapada, in the Buddhist teaching, we said, there's nowhere where one might leave free from being overcome by death. Nowhere. We could say, nowhere can we scooch away from the reality that at every turn we meet what's not known. Can that be part of the adventure? Don't make it grim. That's why liturgy is amazing, because liturgy puts us right into not knowing. I mean, we dedicate these merits. Where is it going? What's going where? Why are we saying this? What do we know? Isn't this a way we meet in the unknown, meet in what's invisible in liturgy? How we celebrate it that we don't know for sure? It is perceived and subtly answered. How does that happen? That's why I think, you know, art practice or the creative process does the same thing. For many of us, it's, you know, fearful because it's a leap into not knowing. That's the fun of it, actually. And when you know, a part of you dies, and so does what you're doing die in that knowing. So you're always trying to move in such a way to keep the art practice in a place in the of, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, as you're working. That's the juice of it. That's the key. That's like the key of a tea serum, the tea or the flute, is that playing into the unknown, of grappling with it right there. And the experience of not known, it's not mind, not thought, not a thing, circles back to what the Buddha was teaching on Vulture Peak. The Heart Sutra is the experience of not. There's 29 no's in the Heart Sutra. The breath that we're breathing is uncertainty, because we can experience very directly it's moving. Always moving, not fixed. Always rising and falling and changing. And the breath is not anything, but it's the one constant. It's the first thing we do when we're born. Last thing we take when we die. And the one constant in between. The breath can only be breathed one moment at a time. We can't take two breaths at once. So it's simple. That's why it's used in the beginning of practice. One inhale, one exhale, one at a time. It can only be breathed now. So when we do our breath, that brings us to now, which is all we have. And we may get that, but we got to get that. We got to get that. The breath can only be breathed here, not there. How can the breath be breathed there? Only here. I remember early in my practice, I was just, I was here. I was pretty new, and my mom was very upset. I'll just use that word. Simple one. And she's like, what are you doing there? Like, what do you do? I was like, wow, that's finally, But I didn't really know. I was just like, I said, I'm sitting there and I'm breathing. And I'm counting them, actually. And she said, well, it's about time. And I was like, what? And I realized when she explained further is I had asthma when I was young, so she was always listening to my breath. So I was very touched by that. She says, now you can do it. I don't have to listen. I was wondering why my door was always open. I used to shut my door, and somehow in the night, my door would be open when I woke up, and that was her. She would keep opening my door to hear me. And then I would say, well, I'm seeing that I'm really suffering. There's a lot of suffering. And she would say, why do you want to do that? Why do you want to look at that? I was like, wow. And I really was new to it, so I was kind of in doubt, too. It's like, do I really want to do that? Like, really? Like, is that what I want to do? The now and the breath are not fixed. They move. They move all the time. And yet they are constant and they are dependable. We can always depend on getting the next breath, depending on whether, providing the system's working. We don't have to think about it. We don't have to think, oh, I have to get to the next breath. We just do it. It's here. And we can depend on being in the now. So as we sum up the courage and stamina and discipline and perseverance to stay with and trust, above all, trust the breath and trust now. Just now. We have those big things, uncertainties, but trust now. And begin to see that uncertainty is movement. It's change. It's the opening of new vistas in the world, in ourself. Uncertainty is necessary. It's the movement of life. And the movement of life is certain and constant and dependable. Not the movement of life, not life, but the movement of life. I don't know if there's any such thing as life. It's just movement of life. This movement of life is now, and it's certain. If we trust the movement, we stop clinging to the illusion of certainty and trust the movement. We trust now. The movement will lead us. Now will lead us to reveal the next now, 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 the next now. And we're there. We're there. And this living in the certainty of uncertain change is called freedom, unlimited freedom. Maybe what we chant, this is nirvana, our complete self. As the Buddha said, the world, right here, us here, whose very nature is to change, is constantly determined to become something else. We are at the mercy of change, but this love of change contains a great measure of fear, and the fear itself is called dukkha. So the freedom I'm thinking about is a process of life, which is an unfolding. The part of life that we have nothing to do with, just like breathing. Nothing to do other than just be in it. Freedom that is the internal acceptance of an unfolding life. It's like water coming down over the rocks, over the twigs, over the leaves. When you move mountains, rivers, and earth, as well as the sun, the moon, and stars to practice, they in return move you to practice. This is why we need courage, to trust, to surrender, trust the movement. So we have to take risks, embrace our uncertainty, really embrace that we don't know, embrace the uncertainty of the world, not allowing it to shake us, distract us, paralyze us, intimidate us, but advance by choice. We learn to, I don't know if it's ride the fear, but or ride the uncertainty or embody. Dogen once said, this was an interesting thing to find, a little Dogen humor maybe, I don't know. There are three things that spoil very easily before they become ripe. Fish eggs, mangoes, and the Buddha seeking mind. Three things that spoil very easily before they become ripe. Fish eggs, mangoes, and the Buddha seeking mind. Can you imagine him right sitting there and like thinking that up? He's trying to get something across to us. These things spoil before they become ripe. Fish eggs, mangoes, and the Buddha-seeking mind. So ripe, when something's ripe, it's very delicate, right? Very delicate. This is the way that we find and nourish our Buddha-seeking mind. It's very delicate, because the mind wants to be awake, wants to be alive, and live life and be fully present. So how do we not spoil that? I'll end with a poem by Anais Nin. And the day came when the risk to remain in a bud became more painful than the risk it took to blossom.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.